Welcome to the Women Who Drone podcast. Join our community. Head to womenwhodrone.co to sign up for online courses, drone lessons, workshops, and more. womenwhodrone.co.
Hi, everyone. My name is Eliza Sarabasa. I'm Director of Communications and Business Development with Women Who Drone. And thank you for joining us today for a leadership panel discussion on the importance of building inclusive women-focused communities in male-dominated industries with our three featured speakers, Lena Bunrusto from Women Who Drone, Theodore Skidis from the Harvard Women 3D, so Women Defense, Diplomacy, and Development, and Nora Torre from the WI3D, Women in 3D Printing. So thank you everyone for joining us, and we'll begin. So the first question that I have is, for everyone is, tell me about yourself, like work, education, history, and what your organization does. So I don't know who to hand the talking stick to first. I'll hand it to Nora.
Okay, I can go first. I just unmuted myself, so good. So thank you, Eliza. Thank you for having me. So my name is Nora Touré. I'm the founder of Women in 3D Printing. My background is heavy on additive manufacturing. And before that, I was studying to be a lawyer. So that was back in France. So I'm French originally, spent 8 years in California, and now I've been in Denver, Colorado for about a year. So as I said, worked mostly on the mostly on the additive manufacturing, in sales roles, biz development, and now in a sales management role, and always sold services in 3D printing. So basically, in companies that were selling 3D printing to other companies. In addition to that, so the reason why I'm here today is because I'm the founder of Women in 3D Printing. So Women in 3D Printing is a nonprofit that I started about 6 years ago. So I didn't start introducing Women in 3D Printing first because it's actually a hobby for me, more like. So it started as a side activity, still is, but I really enjoy it. So we are, as I said, a nonprofit with one very simple mission, trying to close the gender gap in additive manufacturing. And the way we're doing this is through events, to our magazine, through initiatives we're putting together. Basically, our tagline is promoting, supporting, and encouraging women in the additive manufacturing space. So I'm sure we'll have more opportunities to talk about it in the next 30 minutes. But this is me in a nutshell.
Okay. Thank you, Nora. Would you like to hand the talking stick to the next speaker?
Yeah. Theo, you're next.
Thanks, Nora. Hi, everybody. And Eliza, thank you so much for organizing this panel. It's so nice to be here. So a little bit about me. I studied philosophy in college, and I also had a real passion for language learning. And so I dabbled in Spanish, Greek, Modern Standard Arabic, French, Turkish, and ultimately Moroccan Darija. And my language learning brought me to countries where those languages are spoken. So I spent a summer in Costa Rica, a summer in Greece, a summer in Morocco, a summer in the West Bank, and then a year in Morocco and a year in Turkey, doing conflict resolution work, poverty alleviation work, and community empowerment work. And I really loved it. I then did my master's in public policy in the years leading up to the 2016 presidential election. And so I had totally imagined myself going back abroad, maybe as part of the State Department, to work in the Middle East and North Africa, where I ended up specializing. But because of everything that was going on, I found myself very drawn to community and political organizing at the local level. So I ended up staying in Cambridge after I graduated from my master's program. And I took on a role at Booz Allen doing national security for the US federal government. So I spent about 5 years doing national security work in support of different defense and intelligence government agencies, working on all kinds of issues all over the world. So it was a lot of fun. And concurrently, I spent a good amount of time investing in my community. So I helped start a neighborhood association. I managed a city council campaign and a lieutenant governor's race. And then I began running a nonprofit that works at the intersection of community building and local economies. So it's been a fun journey. Most recently, I just joined Twitter's global public policy team, where I'm now working on a bunch of public policy issues and helping create strategy for the global policy team. So I'm really excited to be stepping into that role. But I'm here with you now because I am the president of Harvard W3D, Women in Defense, Diplomacy, and Development. So we are a global network. We have about 2,000 members, and we are dedicated to connecting and cultivating global leaders who work together towards sustainable peace. And so we were founded in 2013 by three Harvard Kennedy School alumni, and we work to build trust and collaboration between the defense, diplomacy, and development sectors. And we do that by empowering women in all three spaces. So it's been a lot of fun. I love the work that we do at W3D, and I'm really happy to be here with you now. And I'll pass along the baton to Elena.
Thank you. It's so incredible to be here with the both of you, who also have some really exciting and empowering communities. Some of you might know, I'm Elena, the founder of Women Who Drone. Women Who Drone is an online female drone pilot community. We inspire, educate, and empower women and girls with drone technology. My background stems from actually content production. I got my start in TV, produced a number of travel shows around the world, then moved on to social content and creating a lot of content for social media and really diving into how to build communities through social media and connecting people. It wasn't until early 2017 that I wanted to go hike the Great Wall of China. And of course, I wanted to film this this hike that I dreamt of since I was a little girl. And I came across drones and realized that I could put my camera in the sky. And I was just really excited about that. So I purchased my first drone, took it on my hike. And it was sort of history from there. I created a video, and then I fell in love with flying drones. And I had a number of women reaching out to me, asking me questions about mostly content creators at the time, how I got started, what drone I was flying, if I had any recommendations. And I just realized that I didn't have all the answers, and simultaneously found out that there were very few women who were flying drones. And at the time, it was less than 4% of women in the US were certified drone pilots. That year, I got my certification and started Women Who Drone, and it's sort of history from there. We've been around for almost 3.5 years now. But yes, I'm really excited to be on this panel with both of you, and it's exciting to just know that there are other communities out there in different industries and how they're really paving the way for more women to enter those industries.
Thank you, everyone, for sharing. I love hearing how you're able to like connect the dots, like hindsight's 2020, and how you came to your current path. And also like within these industries, everyone saw there was a gap, or it's just like there's something needed, and that hopefully segues into our next question. Why do you think it's important to build a female-only community in your industry?
So for W3D, I would say, so for us, based on the knowledge that trusted relationships and inclusive groups are the key to real collaboration and positive change across defense, diplomacy, and development as three separate but highly interconnected spaces, we look to tap into the underutilized power of women as influential leaders for sustainable peace and global equality. So we recognize that women are underrepresented in all three spaces. And so we have a three-pronged mission. We try to cultivate women leaders, build a trusted network of defense, diplomacy, and development experts, and also foster sustainable peace and security solutions. Women are often excluded from conversations on peace and security, and we're 50, 51% of the population, and we have a lot of really good ideas. So we work to develop leaders, inspire change, and engage the world. And we think that women are a really important stakeholder and a heavily underutilized one. And so our hope and our aspiration is that by empowering women in defense, diplomacy, and development, we might foster collaboration between the spaces, which leads to more holistic peace outcomes, and empower women as advocates for change within these spaces. And so it's a two-pronged approach, but an approach that is mutually reinforcing, and women are at the center of it. Elena, do you want to go?
Yes, absolutely. I am so passionate about community building, specifically because I have seen the growth of Women Who Drone over the past 3 years, and just it's really, you know, the community has taken it into their own hands. And we have a number of people who are part of our Facebook group community here today, and you can see the engagement that is occurring there. I think what's really exciting about building a female community is that there are so many conversations that are being had that wouldn't have otherwise if this, you know, area or this group that we created on Facebook didn't exist. And so there are also women who have met up with each other previously when we could all meet up to fly drones, who have connected and have done workshops together. So I think building a community that is, you know, driven by a specific niche, in this case, drone technology, has really just paved the way for building incredible stories about how women are using drone technology, which we can then share with more girls and the community, and then also the education factor where they're teaching each other. When one person has a question, another person has the answer, and you can just ask that question to the community. This can go for, you know, content creation, but it can also go for FPV droning, which is first person view droning. So I'm seeing these questions happen every day. And I didn't have the answers in the beginning. So now that we have this community of 1800 members who are conversing and engaging with each other on a daily basis, I think the importance there is that you're getting information from a like-minded individual that you wouldn't have been able to find if this group didn't exist.
That's really true, Elaine. It's like having that safe place, work my enunciation skills. I'm going to hand the talking stick to Nora.
Yeah, so on our end, I would say specificities of women in 3D printing is that it's open to men. Out of our platforms, there is only one group that's so the LinkedIn group that we have that is women only. Everything else, even our events, are open to men to join, and we want men to join. We want and we need men to be in the room, because what we do ultimately is to provide a platform to share the stories of the female leaders in our industry. But you absolutely need male allies to see who those women are and to work in partnership with them, because we don't want to be a women's club. We've never been. We never will be. The additive manufacturing space is a very interesting industry that's at a crossroad between tech and manufacturing. So both really heavily male-dominated industries. And as a result, in additive manufacturing, the latest results show 13% of women. So it's not great, obviously. Still a little bit better than what we can see in manufacturing. But still, there's absolutely no reason for us to not have more women in this industry. Some of the historical reasons why there might not be as many women in tech or manufacturing should not exist in additive for multiple reasons. I mean, I can spend hours talking about it, but there shouldn't be any reasons. I mean, as I said, I have a background in law, and I ended up in additive manufacturing in Silicon Valley for 8 years. And if we look at it, most of us in additive manufacturing have very various backgrounds and previous lives, but ended up in additive because the actual barrier to get into additive is actually not so high as we can think it is. Like, it can be in very specialized tech or manufacturing departments and technologies. So with additive, it is more open. So you have, B2C, B2B, we need people in every level of additive manufacturing, on the software side, on the machine side, on the material side. So we need scientists, we need researchers, we need marketing, we need sales. It's an whole industry by itself. And I still don't see a reason why we only have 13% of women in this industry. So anyway, that's the, I'm getting lost in the question, but that's be a full mainstream printing. And it's not a woman-only platform. This is the important message I think I wanna get here is that, yes, we are a platform to support and encourage women. We always will feature women only. So whenever we do an event, it's women only. The interviews we do on the blog, it's 99% women. Only this year, we actually decided to start featuring male allies who are in positions to actually make a change in terms of diversity and inclusiveness in the company. we think they deserve to have to be featured as well on a blog to show the work they're doing, to also inspire other men to do the same and to follow the path, and knowing that empowering women is something that should be normal. And so women and more diversity and more inclusiveness, we're actually going more and more towards more of not just gender equality and gender equality. So we're trying to open up a little bit more to more inclusiveness and diversity in a more broader sense. But yeah.
Oh, thank you, Nora. That's great. I think you did a great job with like answering the question, like why is it important? And like everyone has shared like the different value and opportunities that these women in the community have, but also that we're equipping them with tools to bring the sense of community back to their workplace so this can be the new normal, right? Like it's normal that we have like equal women like in these like industries. Thank you.
I hope there will be a day when women in 3D printing is not relevant anymore. Because we'd be like, yeah, we're at 50-50. Why would we have a group for 50% of the workforce in additive? I dream of this day. I know we're not there yet, and they're probably going to transform into something else by then, but I would really hope that at some point we get there.
Yeah, hopefully the world gets better day by day. So, thank you. And I'm going to move to the next question. Next question is, what are some ways you have seen your organization make an impact through community building?
The impact, I think it's still ongoing, but we've built a community of 23,000 throughout the world. So we have, and I think we have about 30% of men, actually. Those are the latest numbers I looked at. So that actually made us like the biggest and most diverse community in additive manufacturing. And it's called Women in 3D Printing, which is, when you think about it, funny because, again, only 13% of the workforce. So the impact, I think, is to make it normal to have a group like this. Of course, we still see people, and both men and women, actually, not understanding the value of such a group. I'm sure you do see it as well throughout your groups, to have some messages sometimes like, so why don't we have a man in 3D printing? Ha ha ha. So this is obviously happening more often than I would want to, less than what it used to be even 5 years ago, because we're legitimate. We are showing real cases, female leaders showing their stories, having an impact. We even had companies raising funds from connecting throughout Women in 3D Printing. So we're really becoming a community that goes beyond what some would see as just a women's group, which is not for me a pejorative thing to say, but for some it might be. And I think over the years, we gain our legitimacy in being a community, a valid community in the additive manufacturing space. And I'm not exactly sure when the switch happened, but it definitely happened over the years. And I think it's when we started to show our growth and to start to show that we were global and that we had a real power in lifting things. So we're doing the reports every year. So we're doing a diversity in additive manufacturing report that's actually really showing value into what, you know, and the state of what diversity is in our industry. And we see also more and more, and I'm not taking credit with Women in 3D Printing at all, but we're seeing more and more new positions in the companies. So VP of People, Chief Transformation Officers, those are roles that were not existing like even 2 years ago in most companies. Definitely not in additive. And now we're seeing way more of those roles. And the people who are in charge of those departments are definitely interested in what they can do with organizations like ourselves. And I think this has been helping us having a bigger impact at the company level. And this, I think, is the way to go. So I do celebrate those companies who are starting to have those initiatives in-house. We even have larger companies who even have their own women's, HP has, I forgot exactly how they called it, but they have a woman initiative inside HP 3D printing. I celebrate this. I find this to be really wonderful. And we're supporting them, they're supporting us. So it's this is exactly what we want to see. So in terms of impact, it's been the entire community that has been more and more open to the question and more understanding of what such an organization can bring to them.
Thank you, Nora. So it's like more conversation opportunity. So really happy to hear that. Going to hand the talking stick to Elena.
Yes, I think, you know, as far as impact goes, as we continue to build the community really is the impact because, as I mentioned, the engagement on a daily basis as they converse with each other and share tips or tricks or whatnot with their how they're using their drones or they're connecting each other to job opportunities. I mean, in addition to that, we are constantly featuring our new pilot spotlights. So that's highlighting a woman in the industry and her story and how she's using drones, whether it's in her career, as a hobby. And then we also have our partnerships. I think the partnerships that we have with Getty Images, with DJI, our Getty Images content collection, where women are given the opportunity to monetize their content through this collection. It has been really impactful just in that they get to monetize the content that they're creating on a daily basis. And then of course we have our job board where we're trying to really give back to the community and connecting them with those job opportunities. And I think at the time, as I mentioned, it was less than 4% of certified drone pilots that were female in the US. And these stats are updated every year. I actually need to go look up the stats because they come out every January on the FAA website. But the last I checked, it was up 7%. So while this needle is moving and it's not, you know, large enough, it's still moving. It's hard to say if the impact is solely women who drone, but I do know a lot of women in the community are studying and getting that Part 107 certification. Mm-hmm. And so that is also really exciting to see as these conversations are being had within the community. So those are just some of the impacts that I can think of off the top of my mind. But I think, yeah, as we continue to build the community, they are constantly impacting each other.
Thank you, Elena. It's like more education, certification, and opening the doors like to new conversations. And so I'll now hand the talking stick to Theo.
Yeah, great. So I would say a lot of the themes that were mentioned before definitely apply at W3D as well. So we create spaces for dialogue and partnership for women across the defense, diplomacy, and development spaces. We do have a few men who are part of our group. We invite men to participate. In fact, we just had a conversation a few days ago on male allies and the importance of having men as partners in these conversations, because unfortunately, women are not the only decision makers. And so it is really important to have males as allies. And so recognizing that all of our events are open to men. And I would say we have, you know, maybe 2% of our membership is male. So it's not a woman-only group, but it is a women-majority group. And the conversation is focused on empowering women. But we do encourage men as participants and as partners and as co-conspirators. So a lot of our focus is on education and relationship building as vehicles for impact. We have a bunch of programmatic opportunities that allow for community building and for impact. So for example, we have had a series of mentoring programs, and the mentoring programs have allowed people who are more senior in the space to guide younger people through, you know, through the choices that they have to make in their careers and make smart and informed decisions. We have events all the time on all kinds of things. We have a grassroots based model for programmatic development. So anyone at any time can organize an event, and it can be broadcast to the global community or to a chapter if they're part of a chapter. We also have a research arm at W3D. So we have an op-ed working group, and we're contributing to op-eds and amplifying the research efforts of our members to better inform each other and to also better amplify the work that we're doing in this space. And we share new opportunities that have become available. So roles and opportunities. We engage in a bunch of partnership building with incredible organizations to expand the conversation beyond the traditional defense, diplomacy, and development spaces. So this is a really good example of that. Organizations that are doing really interesting and related work that we might not think of ordinarily. And then we also do a lot of community building and impact through our chapters. So we are a chapter-based model, and we have chapters in approximately 15 cities around the world. So it's, yeah, we look at impact through all different channels, but like was said earlier, a lot of it is through the lens of education and relationship building.
Thank you, Theo. That segues into our next question to ask. What is some advice you'd like to share with young women entering a male-dominated profession? Would you like to also answer that first?
Definitely. Okay. I would say find mentors. I have benefited tremendously from mentors who are both male and female. You don't have to just find women mentors. Men can be really good advocates for you too. I mean, some of my best mentors at Booz Allen and the people I'm most sad to say goodbye to as colleagues, but not as friends, are men. And, you know, it's so helpful to find mentors. I was chatting with a woman, a college student who I think is originally from Iraq, but is living in the US now, and, you know, was connecting her with all of these resources that as someone who has spent time in the Middle East and has built relationships with people across NGOs and university spaces and other spaces, I've been able to show her a broader organizational map than she might otherwise have initially, you know, envisioned. So I would say finding mentors is definitely the number one thing. And then just building relationships and joining organizations like these. So joining organizations that are mission aligned and focused on empowering women in these spaces. I mean, it's just, these are wonderful platforms to get to know opportunities and join conversations and learn more about the ecosystem and get acquainted with opportunities that folks, you know, would otherwise not have access to.
And these are really helpful tips. Thank you, Theo.
Of course.
And hand the talking stick to Nora.
Yeah, I just wanted to agree with Theo. I think that, you know, that's one reason why these communities exist, is so that women who feel, I mean, who enter isolated. These industries and there is a lack of community. Yes, exactly. If they feel isolated, this is a great way to start. Another thing I would add to that is don't be afraid to ask questions and don't be afraid to have a voice at the table. I know oftentimes, and I've been in this position where you're surrounded by men in a room and they have all the answers and you feel like, you know, they know everything and any question you ask is gonna be a stupid question. There is no stupid question. Always ask your question. Don't be afraid to ask them. It took me a while to ingrain that in myself. And I just, till this day, I'll ask any question. Even if I know, okay, maybe this was mentioned already, or maybe, you know, everyone knows this answer, or I don't know it. Just don't be afraid to ask those questions and to speak up in those meetings or anytime you're at the table with just men.
Yeah, so true. Thank you, Elena.
Yeah, so totally agree with Elena and Theo here, of course. And so I remember when I started in this industry, I felt like isolated, intimidated. I went to, especially at the time when you were going to those, like all of those conference rooms, and actually mostly what I could see were older white males. and I didn't feel like I belonged. Like I was a foreigner, I was less than 24, I was a woman. And I knew what I was talking about. I had been in this industry for a while enough, and I came to the US because I knew I was good enough. My company had sent me here to build the company in the US. So, and I was young, so I knew I was good enough, but I just didn't felt like it. And I didn't felt welcomed at the time. This is the reason why I started Women in 3D Printing, because I wanted to reach out to other women who had been in my shoes, and I couldn't find them. And honestly, when I started, I thought there would be like older women in my network. There were like 12 that I knew at the time. I was like, okay, I'm going to share the stories one a month. And so if someone else is interested in those, they're going to find them. Mm-hmm. Story shows that no, there were way more than 12. We're continuing to interview them every week. But anyway, the long story short is that reach out, try to find a woman in those. So whether it's, well, in drone, in defense, in additive manufacturing, the groups are here, but in other industries, the same thing. There are like even very small, tiny groups of women who get together and who meet and who are supportive to one another, trying to find them as hard as it is. But now we have like LinkedIn and all of those virtual events, trying to find them. And they will be supportive. They are going to share advices. They are going to be the welcoming anchor that you need. Because yes, it can be intimidating when you look at the entire industry that is male dominated. But then on our level, when we start, look at like the next step, like the company you're joining, are there women in there? Who are they? Do they look like you can relate to them? Are they the next step, you know, in your career sort of mentor? Because it's good to have Marissa Mayer as a role model, fine, but not everyone is going to be the next Marissa Mayer or the next Michelle Obama. So try to find someone who is, you know, your manager or a manager in another department that you can relate to, that shows mm-hmm. you a career path. And I'm actually stealing this from one of her, Sunita, who is at HP and who said that in one of her podcasts that she did with us not too long ago. And I was like, yeah, obviously. I mean, but yeah, someone needs to say it, because when you're young and you start, it's not easy to know who you should see as a role model. It's not necessarily the highly successful few women that you are going to see on TV. It's actually your manager or the manager again to the next department or the CEO of your company if you're lucky enough to have a female CEO. So look at those person to be your immediate role model, and at least you can chat with them and they can share with you the path, and you'll see it's not as intimidating or as far away as you imagine that it is, and that will give you something to work towards too, that's attainable and achievable. So that would be my advice. Try to find a role model that is accessible, that you can talk to, and that will also be your mentor, but mostly a role model, because mentoring is not for everyone. I know I'm not the best mentor, and a lot of people come to me because of the visibility I have with women 3D printing. I know I'm a good manager, but I'm not necessarily the best mentor, because those are different things. So when you look for someone you want to look up to, don't necessarily expect them to be a mentor as well, because sometimes you could be disappointed. But having conversation advices is one thing. Having an actual mentor could be a different thing. So those can be different persons. So try to have your, you know, your safe circle of people who are going to cheer you up, who are going to help you or give you advices, and then some few others that you're looking up to, that you know this is a career path you want to have.
That's so true. And I love that, like, everyone's advice, like, can apply whether, like, you're a young woman or you're coming back, you know, from having a child or you're switching careers. Like, one, finding your community, building your courage, like, to speak up and having conversations, like, to ask for help. Like, all those are really important. So thank you. And so we'll move on to community-specific questions. We'll start with Elena. So the question I have for Women Who Drone, are there any programs or initiatives you have to encourage more women to join your community?
Yes, thanks for asking. So one part of our, well, a part of our mission is to educate. So we're educating with our stories. That's through our articles, again, our pilot spotlights. Then we also have our education factor, which is, you know, an event like this right now, us talking to other empowering women who have amazing communities. We have our virtual workshops teaching our community the various ways they can use different technologies for their drone. Previously, we were doing in-person workshops. With those workshops, we were also encouraging our community to become instructors in their area. And then I mentioned our Getty Images collection, where we are helping women monetize their content too, so they can join the community and they can also monetize their content. We also have our brand ambassador program. We have about 60 brand ambassadors globally. These women are not only, you know, highlighting the brand across their channels and sharing all of the sharing our mission statement with their audiences, but they also get access to certain perks, like the conferences that we have. We partner with a number of drone conferences that happen throughout the year, and we provide passes or speaking opportunities, partnerships with some of the organizations we've partnered with. And I know I'm leaving one thing out. Oh, yes, of course. Our we go to schools. We haven't gone in the past year because of the situation we're all in, but we're moving into, like, virtual sessions where we're giving back to the community. We've gone to schools to teach girls how to fly drones. We've shared those pilot spotlights to encourage them to think about picking up a drone or just introducing them to drone technology so that they can understand the various ways that they can be used outside of content. And then actually, like, giving them a drone, letting them fly it. So that is definitely ways that we're encouraging girls, but also women, to join the community and to just share how they're using drones for themselves.
Yeah, and I know you mentioned before, Elena, with Girls Who Drone, like, when you're you first like start talking to class, the kids are kind of like glaze over. It's like middle of the day, but when they actually see the content you can film, record, or you know, using construction or the satellite and just like all these different industries, they're like, oh, this is cool. I want to try it too. Instead of just letting it be like a boys club thing. So yeah. And
yeah, yep, that's right. We'll walk in and they have no interest, and then we show them the photos and they all want to fly a drone immediately after that.
It's like the hook. So thank you, Elena. So I'm going to hand the talking stick to Theo. So two questions. The first question is, what is your process in developing support? So knowledge, resources, or events that matches the national or local strengths of like chapters, but also the needs of your community members?
Yeah, definitely. Great question. So we have a very large board and chapter lead community. So we have about 30, 35 people on our leadership team. And that is very useful for a lot of reasons. And one of the reasons is that we're able to pool resources and knowledge and ideas from a very large community of people. So we meet on a frequent basis, and we have various communication channels that allow us to readily share information across the very large leadership team that W3D has. But we're also very connected to our membership. So like I said earlier, we are a grassroots community-based group, and our programming comes from the community itself. So for example, in the fall, we had a member who wanted to put together, she's India-based, but she has done a lot of work on Israel-Palestine, and she wanted to put together a conversation that brought together pretty interesting and significant stakeholders from both communities to talk about the peace process. And so we organized a wonderful event, and she was just a member. She wasn't actually part of the leadership team. Or we had someone also with an India connection put together a conversation on activism in India. Again, a member. She also became one of our chapter leads for Chicago, but we really welcome ideas from anyone in the organization. So there's not a very strict process for creating programming and creating really anything that folks want to bring to bear in the organization. So people do highlight needs and interests that they have. And then we have a board that is active in all different spaces. So for example, we have a research chair and diversity and inclusion co-chairs to focus on a whole range of different issues that are of interest to our membership. So I would say that our large and engaged leadership team, combined with a really informal model for generating knowledge and events and opportunities, allows us to match the services that we're offering with the needs and interests of our community members.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. You have that like support network. So people, they want to suggest an idea, like they can run with it, and they have the community that's interested. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay. And the second question I had for you was, what are your 2021 goals in addressing the gender gap in security studies at HKS and in the broader foreign policy community?
Yeah, so a few years ago, we actually worked with students at HKS, the Harvard Kennedy School, to start a student W3D group. So we got quite a bit of funding from the Belfer Center, and the Belfer Center is focused on international studies and specifically through the lens of security, because they recognize that the center and security studies at HKS generally very much underrepresent women. So because of this growing interest in supporting women, we founded a student W3D chapter, which has several hundred members, I think. So it's a little bit smaller, but it has students who are currently enrolled on campus at HKS and also throughout Harvard to bring this conversation to the classroom and to bring the conversation, you know, in an extracurricular way to students on campus. So we're hoping that this partnership with the Belfer Center and with students who are on campus will allow us to bring this conversation more actively to the Harvard Kennedy School.
It's great to hear. I'm really looking forward back when everyone's back to meeting in person. I know part of like the college university experience, everyone can see it's like online courses, it's nice to get information, but like building friendship relationships and having conversations with people in person, as a not teenager anymore, it's like it's nice, but you're not fully an adult either.
Yeah.
So
yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that too.
Yeah. And I'll have the talking stick to Nora. And so my first question for her is, how is, like, I guess the industry unfamiliar with 3D printing responding to i3D?
Pretty well. They're usually surprised. If it's their first time hearing about 3D printing and they hear it through the lens of women in 3D printing, they come as surprised, like, oh, wait, women in 3D printing, this is not exactly what I was expecting, which is good. That's what we want, because what we, especially through the lens of what we do with our Women in 3D Printing Next Gen initiative, which is really the youth branch. This is what we do. We're actually trying to work with schools, because most of the time, like, schools get, those who have funding, get a 3D printer, play with it for a few months, and then they're kind of running out of ideas of what to do with those. So we're trying to give them content and curriculum that they can work with that are created by women. And so right now we still, like, we have it created, like, the goal is 75% created by women. Back to this idea of working hand in hand with men, but promoting mostly women. So Next Gen is probably the only initiative we have where it's like 75% women and the rest men. The rest is 100% women. But we thought, like, we also want to give a chance to boys. It's not only for girls. We want boys to see female role models. And we find that having a mix between men and women as role models make it more approachable for everyone. So we've decided to do this with Next Gen. But so people who are unfamiliar with 3D printing and who get the first taste through women in 3D printing are usually, well, finding the community very welcoming, so are pretty happy with it. So the first touch is like, oh, it's a bit surprised. But then, you know, like, getting to know the technology and, like everyone else, falling in love with it and staying in and sticking with it. But I would say it's, our goal is really to provide female role models, but obviously to also talk about 3D printing. So all the content we're putting out there is really highly knowledgeable knowledge about 3D printing. So
that's great that you're creating that curriculum. I remember we worked at Mozilla Firefox and 3D printing. It is like, back then you could only get 3D printer in the classroom or the library and, like, not one at home. And now I look at, like, oh, it's so much more affordable to have it at home. But for me back then, it's like, oh, I didn't really want to make toys as much. It's like, oh, what are tools I can use, like, every day? Or, like, if I want to build something, how can I build those parts? Like, build my own chess set. So it's great to, like, hearing you have that programming and seeing more women and making it, like, normal to have, like, a woman teacher.
This also, we don't want to reinvent the wheel, so we're actually curating the content that's already out there. So as you can imagine, it's a lot of research work that we're doing right now, inventing the programs and the quality of them and who the instructors are. But yeah, it's we do think there is a lot of value in doing this work.
Yeah, it's great to hear. The second question I had for you, so you recently had the Women 3D Printing Conference. I would say, like, a week or 2 weeks ago. So I know, like,
you're like, last week.
So, okay, my question is, but you can, like, also, like, describe as much as you want this topic. So what was your process of building, like, the programming or just overall planning, like, for this conference?
So it was interesting. It took took us a year of work. As I said earlier, we are a team of volunteers only who are doing this as a side project. None of us is full-time on Women in 3D Printing, nor on the conference. So it took, like, a long time to put it together because none of us had done that before. And we had no idea what we were embarking ourselves into. So no regrets, but it took much more work than we thought it would, especially because it took a... It amplifies itself over time. Like, at first I was thinking of doing something, like, when I first threw the idea of doing a Women 3D Printing Conference, I was like, yeah, okay, it's going to be one day, 20 speakers. I thought it would be in person because we started working on this before COVID. Obviously everything changed, like, the week I was supposed to give the check to the location, and I hope everyone in quarantine was there. I'm maybe not giving a big check now to anyone. I'm gonna hold on to that check a little bit longer. It was a really good call last year to do that, so we ended up doing it virtually. But doing it virtually opened a lot of doors in having way more speakers from all around the globe. And so as we saw the influx of speakers who wanted to share the stories and the technologies through the conference, only female speakers, we had to revisit our plans. So we had to go from a single day event, one track, 20 speakers, to 2 days, five tracks, 147 speakers. Wow. And all of that's done virtually with our team of, we were eight. So we expanded over time, but ended up with a team of 16. Actually, we doubled the team of volunteers, but that was it. And so, and we had no idea what we were embarking ourselves into. So that was interesting. Learned so much from the process. I'm extremely proud of the work we've done. It was a very successful event that could have been a disaster, but ended up being a really successful event. And we did not waste our time doing it. And we're going to continue doing it every year. The format might change. Is it going to be virtual all the time? Probably not. Is it going to be virtual next year? Probably, actually, because I don't think we have enough. Anyway, there's a lot of reasons to it. But I think early 2022, it might be too soon for our community to feel necessarily safe in traveling. The other aspect is, like, we're reaching out to women who are not necessarily yet in the industry, who don't necessarily have the budget to travel on their own, to go to one conference or the other, wherever in the world. And we want to make it accessible. So that's another reason why I'm thinking maybe we will stick to virtual for a little bit longer, or at least having a hybrid format when we are big enough to do that. Because hybrid format is another story. It's a lot of much more work as well involved, so we'll see. But yeah, all the work that went into it was fantastic work, volunteering work, and I have no regrets, but it was something. And we did not expect to have as many speaker abstracts to go through. Like, we had maybe 50 speakers. So yeah.
That's positive. Yeah, it's positive. It exceeded your expectations.
It did. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, by far. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Nora. So thank you to our speakers for joining us for our discussion today. Appreciate so much for having you join us.